Good morning. I'll call us in here to order. We've got the November 13th Planning Commission meeting. And I see quite a few people here. If you are interested in making a public comment, we have forms right there on the side. And you just write down which item you'll be wanting to comment on, and you can turn those in, and then you'll be called up in order. Individuals get 3 minutes, organized group presentations are 5 minutes, and agent presentations are 12 minutes. I'm just going to call us to order, and could we have a roll call, please?
Yes, good morning. Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Viacana?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Avila?
Here.
And Chair Shaw?
Here. Okay, let's all stand and have the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, now I'm going to open up public comment, but this is just for items that are not on the agenda. So if you're here for something that you don't see on the agenda,
No request to speak.
Okay, we don't have any requests to speak, so I'm going to close public comment, and then I am going to go to planning staff updates, please. Hi.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Mark LaRue, Planning and Building, and I'm sitting in for Eric Hughes today, who is under the weather. So I'm going to do my best to patch this together on 15 minutes notice. I was provided a public announcement to start off with. Planning staff would like to inform members of the public that there is an active phishing campaign impersonating the County Planning Department and Planning Commission requesting payment of approval fees via wire transfer. Please remember the county does not request wire payments, and official emails come from @co.slo.ca.us, addresses only. If you or your clients receive a message like this, do not reply or send funds. Instead, forward the email to Eric Vitale at the District Attorney's Office at evitale@co.slo.ca.us and reach out to the Department of Planning and Building to confirm any payment or correspondence. Thanks for helping keep our process secure. So with that, I will jump into our staff updates. The following information is a recap of the items of interest to the Planning Commission of the decisions of the Board of Supervisors that took place at their last meeting on November 4th. There was a hearing to consider the amendment to the Dana Reserve Specific Plan. It was tentatively approved with a 4-1 vote and will be heard again on consent on the 11-18 Board of Supervisors agenda for the second reading of the development agreement and final approval. One of the other items, the board considered options for the preliminary study scope for the housing element implementation plan for action 7, which is streamlining housing permitting, and implementation action 8, which is rezoning. After a robust discussion and due to the complexity of these issues, the action item was requested that staff schedule a series of study sessions to be agendized on future board meetings at a date early in 2026. And the board considered an appeal by Patrick McGibney of the Los Osos Sustainability Group of the Planning Department hearing officer's approval of a request by Paul and Melanie Kasten for a minor use permit, coastal development permit, to construct a single-family residence in Los Osos. The appeal was denied. Planning Department hearing officer's approval upheld with a 5-0 vote. And with that, coming up for your next meeting, which will be your last meeting of the year, you have a full schedule. There are currently 4 items on the agenda. Item 1 is a request for an amendment to a previously approved minor use permit to permit a 30,000-gallon propane tank and support appurtenances at 6240 Monterey Road. Within the industrial land use category, this project site is located in the community of San Miguel, approximately 2,000 feet south of Osona Road. The second item is a hearing to consider a request for an amendment to a development plan through a conditional use permit. 2 modifications to the approved development permit are requested for the winery to expand current wine pairing food service and allow restaurant services to exceed the 800 square foot limit within the approved visitor serving area. And the second is to remove conditions 9 and 10 from the 2001 development plan to allow seating and tasting on the ground floor terraces and upper terraces. This project will result in no new disturbance on a 25 acre parcel. The project is located west of the community of Templeton and the city of Paso on Highway 46. The third item for consideration will be a request for a conditional use permit to allow phased construction of a new winery and distillery facility with shared tasting room and exterior use areas. The applicant is also requesting these modifications to the standards set forth in Section 22 of the County Code to modify reduced required setback for facilities with public tasting. Two, a modification of the standard for winery special events to allow outdoor amplified music after 5 p.m. And three, a modification of the signage standard to allow two freestanding signs at a maximum height of 22 feet. Lastly, the project includes a request to amend conditions of approval to allow a new commercial agricultural access driveway and to expand the designated building envelope for the purpose of establishing an accessory dwelling unit of farm worker housing within an existing workshop. The project site is located about 1 mile southeast of the city of Aurora Grande at 2449 Brady Lane. And the last item on your agenda for your next meeting is a hearing to consider a request for a phased tract map and conditional use permit to subdivide a 43-acre parcel into a cluster subdivision planned unit development consisting of 181 residential parcels, two commercial parcels, two utility parcels, and four open space parcels for a total of 190 parcels, along with varying on-site and off-site improvements. The project qualifies for the California density bonus by offering a portion of the proposed residences for moderate income affordable housing. The proposed project is located on the bluff overlooking the Salinas River at 3000 Indian Valley Road in the community of San Miguel. And that completes staff updates.
Thank you. Does anyone have questions? Okay. Do any commissioners have updates to share? Okay. Then I'm going to move to, move us into our first hearing item, the consent agenda. Sorry, not hearing item, consent agenda. And let's see. Does anyone have any questions or comments on the consent agenda? If not, I'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent.
And is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, and I also need to open public comment. No requests to speak on the consent items. I'll close public comment. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call on the consent, please?
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yep.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, now we will move into our hearing item. We have our first one. Our hearing to consider a request by HR Holdings LLC for a vesting tentative tract map and conditional use permit to subdivide an existing 13.59 acre parcel into 57 parcels for the purpose of sale and development. And I will hand it off to staff because I see you're ready. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Presenting today will be Lane Sutherland, project planner, with Cheryl Koo, supervising planner, for support.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Lane Sutherland, and I'm the project planner for the proposed tract map and conditional use permit. The applicant, HR Holdings LLC, is requesting approval of a phased vesting tentative tract map and a conditional use permit to subdivide a 13.59 acre parcel into 52 residential lots and five open space lots for a total of 57 lots. The project has been designed in conformance with the plan development standards outlined in section 22.22.145. Development would occur in three phases and includes on-site private roadways, frontage improvements on equestrian road, off-site improvements, and landscaped common areas. Development of the 52 residential lots will occur after sale of each individual lot to private owners, as conditioned prior to recordation of the tract map, an owner's association, sub-association of the Heritage Ranch Owners Association, or other acceptable entity will be required to be established in a form acceptable to County Council for the development and ongoing maintenance of common ownership areas, facilities, and amenities. The project includes three requests for deviation from standard improvement requirements. First, an adjustment to reduce the right-of-way width from 50 feet to 42 feet. Second, a waiver of the requirement to install curb, gutters, and sidewalks. And third, a request to increase the maximum drainage basin depth from a maximum of 2 feet to approximately 6 feet. Staff supports the right-of-way reduction and curb gutter sidewalk waiver requests due to the project setting in the surrounding neighborhood, which lacks these improvements. Additionally, staff is in support of the increased maximum depth to the drainage basin as it is appropriate for the site design and allows for a smaller footprint and more efficient use of the parcel without creating complications. On October 31st, 2025, the applicant requested to phase the tract map and conditional use permit and to have this written into the project description for today's public hearing. Staff consulted with other county agencies, such as Public Works and County Fire, to secure updated conditions and has revised the staff report, Exhibit A, conditional use permit findings, Exhibit B, phased tract map findings, and Exhibit C, conditions of approval, to accurately reflect this change in the hearing materials. Staff is in support of the request to phase the map and conditional use permit into three phases. Over the last week, staff has received numerous letters from residents of the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. A majority of the letters included the same three concerns. Those concerns were future financial sustainability, on-site parking, and construction mitigation. In response to these letters and concerns, staff would like to respond to each topic. The letters received state that Tract 3110 must join the Heritage Ranch Owners Association in order to ensure that they do not create an unsustainable financial burden on the ranch infrastructure and amenities. Staff would like to note that the project is conditioned to establish a Property Owners Association or other organized and perpetual mechanism to ensure inspection, operation, and maintenance of the improvements. The applicant has also indicated that they intend to join the HROA through a sub-association or other appropriate mechanism. These details are to be worked out by the applicant and HROA prior to recordation of the map should the project be approved. Second, regarding on-site parking, the letters state that the site plan doesn't allow for sufficient parking for boats or RVs. Section 22.18.050, required number of parking spaces, generally governs the required number of parking spaces to be implemented. Additionally, Section 22.104.030, Heritage Ranch Village Standards, Site Planning and Development Standards, require a minimum of two parking spaces, one of which shall be covered for each new residential unit in a new development. At the time of building permit submittal, all residential lots will be required to provide these parking spaces as outlined in the land use ordinance. Should individual lot owners choose to incorporate a design for a larger garage for boats and RVs, they will have the ability to do so on their lot. Neither the county land use ordinance or any planning area standard or specific plan require the project to incorporate boat and RV parking. Third, regarding one-time construction impacts, the letter states that impact fees will go to the county but not the HROA. The letter states that the applicant should have to pay the HROA one-time construction impact fees and a buy-in fee as part of the mitigation for the impacts of their project. Staff would again like to note that the project is conditioned as requested by the Public Works Department to provide CC&Rs and maintenance agreements at the appropriate time to ensure the maintenance of improvements in an acceptable manner. The county doesn't historically condition projects to pay impact fees to owners associations, as this is not a requirement in our land use ordinance. Moving along, this map shows the location of the project site in the broader Heritage Ranch community. It is located east of Lake Nacimiento and northwest of the gated entry to Heritage Ranch on Gateway Drive. The property is designated residential single family and is located within the Heritage Ranch Village Reserve area. Nearby land use categories include recreation to the west and open space in surrounding areas, buffered by residential single-family zoning, shown in yellow. No land use or zoning amendments are required, and the project is consistent with applicable land use policies. This aerial view shows the project site surrounded by existing single-family homes to the west and northeast, and undeveloped land to the north, southeast, and south. The project site is currently used as an existing non-conforming boat and RV storage site, which will be removed should the project be approved. Additionally, the site supports non-native grasses and scattered oak trees. This slide shows the proposed phased vesting tentative tract map layout, which includes 52 residential parcels ranging from 6,000 to 7,760 square feet and internal access roads A, B, and C, which will provide access throughout the development. As shown here, the project will have two access points from Equestrian Road and provide a secondary emergency access to the south of the site connecting to Ibis Lane. And to point out where that secondary access will be, it's located right here. To reiterate, the applicant has requested to process a conditional use permit in addition to their tract map, allowing for a planned development, which includes 52 residential lots and 5 open space lots. This graphic shows the proximity of the common community gathering areas to each proposed residential lot. As required, each lot is within 300 feet of a proposed community gathering area. The planned development standards also require the applicant to provide private outdoor space, which will be accomplished with private front, side, and rear yards. As allowed by the planned development standards, the applicant has requested a variable 10-foot front setback consistent with the proposed building envelopes, which must be met at the time of building permit submittals on individual lots. On-site improvements include construction of internal streets A, B, and C, mountable rolled curbs, omitting sidewalks from both sides, and completion of necessary utility improvements on-site. As mentioned previously, the project will utilize an existing 30-foot access utility and drainage easement per Tract 1094 Unit 1 and create a 24-foot wide secondary emergency access road to county fire standards extending south from the project site to Ibis Lane. As outlined earlier, the applicant has requested that the project be completed in 3 phases. After consultation with other county agencies and revisions to the hearing materials, staff supports this request. Notably, phase 1 will include 22 lots, including 20 residential lots, along with the off-site emergency secondary access to satisfy county fire requirements pertaining to dead-end road standards. Phase 2 consists of 17 lots, including 15 residential lots, and the final phase 3 will include the last 18 lots, including 17 residential lots. The landscaping plan includes trees and vegetation along the road and entryways to screen the subdivision from nearby residences and roadways. This design supports a rural aesthetic with native drought-tolerant plant selections, which helps integrate the project into the surrounding community character. The applicant has provided a visual rendering showing the proposed plan development. Housing styles proposed in the applicant's submittal materials include Craftsman, Farmhouse, Mediterranean, Monterey, and Spanish styles. While the project is not conditioned to develop these styles exclusively, the project is conditioned to show all development consistent with the applicable development standards outlined in County Code Title 22 and the Heritage Ranch Village standards, as well as in conformance with the project's landscaping plan. Future development of individual lots has been conditioned to conform with the Land Use Ordinance Title 22 design standards. Guidelines include a maximum height of 35 feet, front setbacks, which are determined by the plan development standards at a variable 10-foot front setback, and a minimum of 2 required parking spaces, one of which being a covered space per residential dwelling. Also to be considered is the determination that this project does not require additional environmental review pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15183, because the project's density and intensity is consistent with the Heritage Ranch Village Plan, part of the county's general plan for which the county previously certified programmatic EIRs in 1980 and 1986. Those EIRs analyzed the build-out of Heritage Ranch area, including traffic and air quality impacts, and established mitigation measures implemented through current standards and policies. The project was referred to several county departments, the Heritage Ranch Community Services District, Air Pollution Control District, and the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. All comments received from county agencies were addressed through project revisions or conditions of approval. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission find the project consistent with the previously certified environmental impact reports and approve SUB 2020-00026/Tract 3110 based on the findings listed in Exhibits A and B and the conditions listed in Exhibit C. That concludes staff's presentation. I'm available to answer any questions at this time. The applicant's agent, Ian McCarville of Kirk Consulting, has also prepared a presentation for you and is available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Does anyone have questions at this time?
I do. Yeah, surprise. So, counsel, I guess really first question for you before we hear from the applicant's agent on purview here. I think it's really important for us all to understand our purview in regards to homeowners associations and our county role in this and how far that goes and doesn't go.
Sure. Yeah, Ben Doerr with County Council. So the county doesn't typically require an applicant to join a specific HOA. So an existing HOA, the annexation process is typically addressed through the CC&Rs, and that will dictate how property that is recently subdivided may be annexed into an existing CC or an existing HOA. But the county doesn't dictate that process. That kind of happens outside of the scope of our typical processes. So I don't think that's something that we would typically condition a project to do.
Okay, and with that said and understood, we generally assume that the developer of a project, that's within an association area, will work that out and join. We do have a case here where the applicant has suggested a sub-association. So that doesn't change things any from our perspective or our legal sort of purview and requirement?
No. So the county's concern is that the infrastructure that we are requiring as part of this project is maintained in some way, and we typically don't get involved in exactly how that maintenance is accomplished. So that's what the condition that that Lane read out would provide, that there is some sort of perpetual mechanism created that will ensure maintenance of the internal improvements.
Okay, so that would get checked through the process down the line, and we're neutral, in theory, on how that happens. Or there are a variety of ways that could happen, but we would ensure that would happen down the line somehow.
Yes, we would ensure that there is some sort of mechanism in place that will ensure that the improvements that we require as a county are maintained in perpetuity by somebody, yes.
Thank you. That's really helpful since so much of this seems to hinge around those questions. Appreciate it.
I think that's all.
That's all for now.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up on that because it seemed like there were three major points, and I just kind of want to make sure I know our purview in each of them. So it sounds like with the HOA, that is to be determined down the line. It needs to be cared for, and it's just going to have to be determined whether it's their HOA or this HOA. But the next one is the parking. I mean, if state parking requirements are being met, do we even have the legal ability to require more?
So we have standards in our ordinance as well that are being applied. So we are kind of confined by that as well in terms of how much parking we can impose.
Okay. And so what I heard in the staff report is these conditions are met at this time.
Yes.
Okay. And then the last one was asking if we could require an impact fee be paid to an HROA. I mean, do we have the ability to require a developer to pay a private entity from where we're sitting?
No, we don't have the authority.
Okay. No. All right, so I just wanted to have that in mind as we kind of go forward. All right, thank you. Anything else? Okay. All right, with that, I think, does anyone have, I have ex parte to disclose, I did have a discussion with the head of the HOA, Jim Cogan, just to get background. Does anyone else want to disclose ex parte?
I had a conversation with Jim Cogan.
Okay. All right. All right, and then I'm going to open public comment.
So we have Ian McCarville with Kurt Consulting.
All right, and so as the agent, they'll get 12 minutes. Is that okay? Cool. All right, thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson Shaw and Commissioners. My name is Ian McCarville. I'm a land use consultant at Kurt Consulting. This morning, I'll be presenting the proposed HR Holdings subdivision and plan development project located in Heritage Ranch. And I do have a presentation up there. It is. There we go. So the project site consists of a 13.5 acre parcel located along Equestrian Road within the Heritage Ranch community. It is one of the few remaining infill parcels that is eligible for a subdivision, kind of effectively forming this donut hole within the community. The site is zoned residential single family and is currently used for a legal non-conforming RV and boat storage yard. The project site was originally created in 1980 as a part of Track 721 when the Heritage Ranch specific plan was first adopted by the county. At that time, the parcel was zoned open space, and since then, the specific plan has been amended a couple times, including a 1986 amendment, which reduced the community's total build-out potential from approximately 4,000 to 2,900 units, and most recently in 2011, when a specific plan amendment was processed again to rezone this site as residential single family, establishing the current land use designation. So the project before you today is proposing to subdivide the existing parcel into 52 residential lots and 5 open space lots. By phasing the map, the applicant can record and release smaller groups of lots and infrastructure improvements as those improvements are completed, which ultimately just helps manage construction timing, financing, and home sales in a practical manner. Under the conditional use permit and plan development application, a total of 52 single-family residences are proposed, each located within building envelopes ranging from approximately 3,700 to 4,700 square feet. The homes will utilize manufactured construction, while garages will be stick-built to allow for owner customization to accommodate boats, watercrafts, and recreational vehicles. Additionally, as a part of the plan development, the project requests a reduction from the front setbacks from 25 feet to 10 feet. However, the garages will maintain a 25-foot setback, ensuring there's additional space for tandem parking. Importantly, during phase one, the project will construct a new secondary access road that will serve both the site and the broader Heritage Ranch community. The emergency access road will connect the project site to the nearby and the nearby subdivisions to Ibis Lane by an existing access easement. The road will be constructed to CAL FIRE standards with a minimum width of 20 feet, 2-foot shoulders, and DG bays. The access and utility easement was established in 1980 as a part of Tract 1094, Unit 1, as shown here. And once constructed, the road will provide emergency egress for more than 200 existing homes, in addition to serving the subdivision, thereby offering a community-wide benefit. As a part of the project, there will be the site will be landscaped with a variety of trees, shrubs, and ground covers to complement the existing native species and maintain the character of the Heritage Ranch community. No lawns will be permitted within the subdivision, helping conserve water and support the natural rural aesthetic of the area. The project also includes 5 community gathering areas, totaling 7,000 square feet. These areas are distributed throughout the subdivision so that all residents are roughly within 300 feet of the gathering areas. Amenities in these areas will include, but will not be limited to, benches, picnic tables, barbecues, covered pavilions, playgrounds, and community gardens. From a subdivision perspective, the project does comply with all minimum size parcel size requirements for the residential single-family land use category, which in this case is 6,000 square feet. While the plan development application could reasonably allow smaller parcel sizes down to 1,750 square feet, the lot sizes for this parcel were in part based on input from the Heritage Ranch Owners Association. The applicant has engaged with the Heritage Ranch Owners Association, or the HROA, for over 9 years, working with 7 different boards. In November 2017, a community-wide meeting was held to present an initial proposal for 65 residential lots, ranging from approximately 4,200 to 4,600 square feet, consistent with surrounding subdivisions. Based on HROA feedback at that time, they requested larger lots and reduced density, for which the project was revised, resulting in the minimum lot size of 6,000 square feet reflected in today's proposal. The applicant has continued to address HROA concerns through written responses, submittals, and meetings, most recently in March, October, and November 2025, including a meeting and ongoing correspondences with HROA General Manager Jim Cogan. Most recently, the HROA and Heritage Ranch residents submitted comments to the commission raising private matters that have already been addressed in a letter to the HROA sent on November 4th, and in a memorandum submitted to the commission yesterday. The first comment suggests that the subdivision should be required to join the HROA. In response, the applicant has previously stated that they intend for the subdivision to join the HROA and contribute its fair share towards private road and amenities. The second comment relates to on-site parking for boats and RVs. The applicant has previously clarified that the new homes will include those stick-built garages with tandem configurations in the 25-foot-long driveways, allowing residents to store boats and RVs without blocking the streets. Additionally, future CCNRs will restrict parking of boats, RVs, and watercrafts along internal roadways to a maximum of 24 hours, consistent with broader HROA rules. It is also worth noting that a new RV and boat storage facility is approved within Heritage Ranch, approximately 1 mile west of the project site, and will provide additional storage capacity for the community as a whole. The third comment concerns construction impacts to private roads. The applicant has agreed to fair share contribution toward roadway repairs for any construction-related wear and tear based on pre- and post-assessments provided by a qualified geotechnical firm. They have also committed to coordinating with the HOA during construction to ensure gates, access controls, and circulation routes remain accessible. Finally, while these matters are private in nature and fall outside of the county's regulatory authority, the applicant has made an attempt to address these concerns prior to entitlement approval. The applicant remains committed to continued coordination with the HROA following the project, consistent with the project's conditions of approval and the Department of Real Estate processing requirements. Lastly, I'd like to request that condition of approval 18J be deleted or revised to clarify that only the subconditions under condition 18 are to be included on the additional map sheet, in addition to the planning department's additional map sheet conditions. That is consistent with the intent of this section, and really the purpose of the additional map sheet is to inform future owners of the subdivision of requirements and standards that they must comply with. Given that many conditions are satisfied prior to the final map recordation, it would be unnecessary to include them on the additional map sheet. And really, by including the including the entire NOFA on the additional map sheet, it can create conflicts down the road with future administrative modifications. And I know this firsthand because we are currently dealing with this on another project where we were required to put the entire NOFA on the map sheet, and we are now having to do a full map amendment for something that can usually be completed administratively. So in conclusion, the project before you today has been designed in full compliance with Title 22 of the Land Use Ordinance and the Heritage Ranch Specific Plan. It will add 52 new single-family homes and a new emergency access road, enhancing both housing availability and community safety. The applicant has made a good faith effort to address all concerns raised by the HROA and Heritage Ranch residents and remains committed to ongoing coordination following project approval. Accordingly, we respectfully request that the Commission adopt the staff recommendation and approve the project with the requested revision to condition of approval 18J. Thank you, and we are available for any questions.
Does anyone have questions?
Could you go back one slide and explain the extra sheet again? Just
for a little more. Yeah, so it's pretty common. I mean, in most instances, subdivisions do have an additional map sheet that have conditions that, for example, would say when you go to build your lot, you have to do a biological pre-construction survey before you build your lot. But a lot of conditions, for example, you know, file your CCNRs and join an HOA before a final map is recorded, that doesn't need to be on the additional map sheet because that condition has already been satisfied by the time the map's recorded and these lots are now being developed. So that's not so much the conflict, but the example that I wanted to share is, and it's not really applicable to this project, but it just brings into the scope of what an administrative modification is. So we have a subdivision in Templeton that was approved for office, and then the county came in and said you can now develop single-family homes or multifamily homes on offices if you pay incentive points. So that's a great opportunity, but because the entire NOFA was put onto the additional map sheet, something that could be now done administratively has to go through a map amendment because it explicitly called out office in the approved development. So I don't know what a future modification would look like on this project, but if there is an administrative modification and it conflicts even slightly with the approved development, we're being told that would require a whole map amendment. So it's just in good practice, we feel like it shouldn't be on the additional map sheet and only the conditions. Like, for example, this section says additional map sheet. All of these conditions should be on the additional map sheet, but not all of the conditions and the approved development in the NOFA should be.
I see staff thinking on that. So, Council, I don't know if there's a response to that right away or if you need a little time to coordinate.
Yeah, maybe give us a few minutes to coordinate.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing. So maybe that's something we can circle back to so everyone knows, making comments, that that's on our radar screen that to check into. Okay, well, are there more? I have a few more questions at this point. Does anyone else want to
I
or
just
do you?
Had Alex? One. I don't know. I just had one because I think you mentioned it, but I want to, it's been mentioned a couple times. I want to make sure I'm understanding. It sounds like joining the HOA or making a sub-association is going to happen down the road. But could you just tell us again, do you know what the intent is there? Are they is the intent to join the HROA or start a sub-association that does its own thing? Could you just explain that one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the intent is to join the HROA. We see a lot of community-wide benefits. We imagine people who are moving to Heritage Ranch wants to have access to the amenities. However, we're just not under an obligation to do that right now. And given that the subdivision application has a 2-year time frame and then 6 time extensions, we realistically don't have to make any decisions for 8 years after this. And that process is governed through the conditions of approval. The CC&R is also submitted through County Council, and it's involved, and the Department of Real Estate is involved in that process. So working through all those nuances right now at that stage is very premature.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay.
Just follow up on that. So if there's no HOA within the first 8 years, hypothetically, what would govern that track privately? Would you guys have a private HOA?
So there's a requirement for an HOA to be formed or to join the HROA before the map is recorded. So, I mean, if neither of those conditions were met, it would mean the map isn't recorded and the project's expired and undeveloped. So, we wouldn't be selling homes without a mechanism in place that governs the subdivision.
Go ahead.
So a few more questions at this point then. It looks like from the file, you do have the HOA also operates the community water and wastewater, or you have WillServe for adequate water and wastewater. Sorted.
We
which
do.
Is what we need now to confirm, because I think there was some confusion on that from the correspondence in the file.
Yes. Yeah. I think we even got an updated letter from them in September of 2024. We had one in the beginning of the application process and received an updated one as well. So we do have an intent to serve letter for sewer and water.
Okay. So those that have been concerned about that not being sorted or in line, that is in line.
Correct.
And that's staff's understanding too, without WillServe in the file. Okay. And then I'm seeing the offer for the kind of keephole in terms of the construction road segment that may bear some impacts for construction. So I'm guessing I know the answer to this from council, but because that's a private road, I mean, that will bear some impacts upon construction before some of the other things happen or the HOA agreement needs to be worked out. Is there some way to get that portion in the conditions of kind of immediate impact? Do we have the authority to do that, particularly when the applicant has already offered to do that?
Bendorth County Council. So there is a condition that the applicant repair any damage to the roadway during the construction process. There is a condition that we can add that will address that. Sorry.
Okay. So
Public Works is showing me the condition as you're asking the question.
Okay.
So there is a condition that we can add that would address that.
Okay. So that's something we could take under discussion then for that when it comes to it, because that would seem a likely impact earlier on that we may want to make sure that we would mitigate, and the applicant's shown a willingness. So I hear staff has that ready to go. Great. And I think I understand the purpose of the phasing, so we'll just make sure there are no problems or commissioner issues with that that's kind of been last minute proposed. But staff is comfortable then, I've heard you say that, but to confirm, with a newly added phasing plan and has gone through the piles and thinks we have enough redlining in to incorporate all of the last minute phasing?
Correct.
Okay, just to be sure on that, since that was a lot of stuff last night, I'm sure the day before for you too. Okay. And then I think that's all for now. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other microphones on, so I'm going to go ahead and move into our next person who would like to come up and speak for public comment.
Yes. Yes, our first request to speak is from Jim Cogan, followed by Tom D.
Okay, now since Mr. Cogan is, I would assume, representing the HOA, how much time does he get? Five minutes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. Good morning. It's impressive that you would commit yourself to serve on days like this. I wanted to say that I was going to joke that it was up to HR Holdings if it was raining, but since it wasn't raining at the HROA, we'll take credit for the commute in being dry. We have almost 20 folks here who have made the trek down from the lake, but out of respect for your time and indulgence, I was just going to ask them to raise their hands rather than speaking. As you mentioned, my name is Jim Cogan. I'm the GM for Heritage Ranch Owners Association. And I wanted to give a little perspective on the ranch because it is way up in the northern end of the county. To call it an HOA doesn't quite do it justice. It really is a small city in many regards. It is actually the third largest private community in the state of California, making it one of the largest in the country. It is currently 2,091 homes. I'm actually excited about this because we'll get over 3,000 when this eventually is built. We have 5,000 residents, 24 miles of roadway. In fact, in order to reach the subject site, you have to drive 2.5 miles on HROA roads after you leave county roads. 2.5 miles on roads that we maintain privately without tax dollars. There are 9,000 acres of land. We have parks, sports courts, pickleball courts, of course. A marina, equestrian center, and a diversity of housing type that ranges from tiny homes all the way up to 20-acre parcels. Development is good. This project has the opportunity to be a great addition to our community, and we are excited about that. We're simply asking that the Planning Commission ensure that this is a great addition to our project. If Heritage Ranch was acknowledged as the municipality that it basically is, since we provide the majority of municipal services to all of the community, this would all be taken care of through the entitlement process. As a former economic development manager, I know that process well because it was my job to make sure that we were getting the kinds of impact mitigations necessary for new developments coming in. The historic relationship between the HROA and HR Holdings has been a little strained, and unfortunately, we have only had the opportunity to connect and turn that into a positive relationship in the last few weeks. And I do want to thank the principals and Ian with Kerr Consulting because they've been very open to having some conversations. I think they were under the impression that we thought development was a bad thing, and we don't. We know that it is a good thing. We have a housing crisis in California, and we're excited to welcome these new residents into the HROA. The challenge we have is that if they are not HROA members, then there is no way for us to mitigate the ongoing impacts that they will bring. I mean, it's similar to me going to Lane, who has been super helpful, but it's similar to me going to Lane and saying, hey, I'm going to build in the county. I'm not going to pay for any of the road impacts that I create, and I'm not going to pay property tax or sales tax going forward. I mean, they would laugh me out of the building. In fact, I wouldn't even be allowed to apply for that application. So our request is to avoid the nuance of a subdivision and joining and just say future residents will be HROA members, period, because they're surrounded by HROA members. In order to be compliant with the Heritage Ranch Village plan, that is one of the expectations of the Heritage Ranch Village plan. And so we feel that it's an appropriate and fair request. And if we were the municipality, it wouldn't even be a discussion point because it would already be taken care of. I do want to say that, the challenge with development, as we have all seen, is that every once in a while there can be an unintentional bait and switch. And if we don't have in writing the intention that the new residents will be HROA members, then there's nothing holding it should something come up where HR Holdings winds up selling this to a builder or selling it to another developer in the future. And so that is our biggest concern going forward. We do appreciate their recent coming to the table. And, you know, given some of the changes that have been made fairly recently, it might be appropriate just to defer this to give us a chance to really come to terms with the outstanding issues and further understand some of the amendments that have been made as recently as this morning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to hold that just because we've seen some things here, so we're not going to get that started. Okay, and who do we have next?
Tom D, followed by Star Graber.
Good morning, members of the commission. My name is Tom D. I'm a owner out there. Unfortunately, I've been out there for like 50 years, so I've seen all the history. You know, we're not opposed to this development by any means, but we want to make sure, absolutely sure, that this development is maintaining the standards of the general plan, okay? And in the general plan, it states that all the roads within Heritage Ranch, okay, are going to be deeded and dedicated and given to the Heritage Ranch Homeowners Association. That's not a homeowner requirement. That's in your ordinance. It says that they get them. It's that easy. So if we approve something here that doesn't address that, it just seems it'll create chaos over there. You have 2,200 homes that have recorded track maps that have gone to the board of supervisors. They've put in there to have private streets. They've waived them. They've come back, given them to the homeowners association, and we paid and maintained them for 50 years now. So that's a big concern. I don't think that's addressed in the staff report, and I think it needs to be at least hashed out because that's number one. Number two, it says that regardless of what all the new standards are, they're going to comply with the rules and regulations of that time, again, in the specific plan. So we're asking for all these variances that are modifying the street width. They're going to create problems. You know, your streets out there right now, maybe 25 feet, but they've got 16-foot trails on either side. You know, here we're going to have a street and curb and gutter and a foot and a half. I mean, you couldn't get ADA, you couldn't anything. You know, again, going back to, you know, the standards within the Village Ranch and in the NASA Metal Subarea Plan, okay, that calls for pedestrian bicycle circulation. So move the road over and put in a trail, you know. So I'm here because I think we need to be consistent, because this is going to send a big message to all the other developers out there. To say we're at the end of the rainbow is nowhere near it. There's another 700 or 800 homes that can go out there. And there's thousands of acres, you know. And this project is surrounded by more single-family developable property. And the owner's king, you know. So there's potential even here. It's not a donut hole. It could be the beginning of the next association. Then we have another association. And then maybe CJ comes in and says, we'll do another association. So now we've got four associations up there. It's not a question of an HOA issue. It's a question of staying on your general plan. You know, we can work with these guys in any way possible. You know, unfortunately, as they said, they've gone through a generation of different general managers up there. It's set up that way. Every 3 years, these guys' contracts are up, so the next guy's in. You know, so it's not an easy place to be, you know, and there's a lot, you know, not only is there multiple different housing, there's multiple different people, you know, just the difference in the community for the tiny homes to the bazillion-dollar homes, you know, it's all there. We're boaters, we're bikers, we're trail riders, we're whatever it is, horse riders, it's all there, you know, and so I just want to stick with the plan. I don't want to make up new rules, and I want to create problems for us down the road.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. You're at the time limit.
Can I defer and get somebody else's time then?
No.
No?
No. Everyone gets the same amount of time. Sorry.
Well, you know, to wrap it up, I think that's a critical part of the CEQA. You know, if you say that those don't exist, then that's a substantial change in your general plan, and that's another breach of CEQA. So I could go over all those issues as well, but I think you need to be cognizant of those things. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our next speaker, please.
Star Graber.
Good morning, Planning Commission. My name is Star Graber. I am here today as a private citizen. I own property at Heritage Ranch. We live there right down the street, Lot 71, Track 1094-2, which is right down the street from this proposed. We've been owners there since 2012, and I wanted to say that because we really hadn't been aware of the history and so forth. We are one of the comments that I saw in the documents was that we would like the new development to fit in with the existing development, and that's important to us. Manufactured homes are wonderful. I live in one. I think it's great. I think that that's a great way to go. One of the things, and you saw the maps, the equestrian area really has spread out open space. And so this is a very different feel just when you look at the two maps. So, for example, with the new development, you have two rows of back-to-back housing. And it's important, and one of my questions has to do, for example, with the propane tanks. We are propane out there at this point, and 25 feet needed for healthy propane. It is a wildfire area. I'm very concerned about the density of the residential facilities. My husband and I live there. My point number two is that we're two people. We have two cars, one boat, one jet ski, and other various lake-type toys. So being sure that there's enough right-of-way and wider streets would be very important to us. And lastly, the points that have been brought up. I would like to have more discussion regarding the HROA. We live right across from the little pool, as we call it, the little pool, the tennis courts, and the basketball courts, which we love. But I'm not sure about 50 more families also using those small amenities in that area. So I'd appreciate any comments about the propane tanks, as well as just a continued commitment to work together. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. And if folks ask questions, I am writing them down, and then we'll address the questions at the end. Who's our next speaker?
That actually concludes our request to speak.
Oh, okay. That concludes our request to speak. So if someone could address the safety of the propane tanks issue, just are there sufficient spacing to make that safe? Is that maybe not part of this new development? I'm just not sure. Oh, Ian's coming up, so.
Yeah, Ian McCarville with Kirk Consulting. Propane tanks are proposed, and they would be installed to the correct standards and maintained safely. And it, what was the exact question, I guess, with the...
The question, I think, was just are there enough, is there enough spacing? Because this is a different look of a development with not as wide of streets. Is it, will it meet the safety requirements and spacing for utilization of propane tanks?
Absolutely. And so to clarify, the width of the road is the same throughout the rest of the community. The reason we were requesting a modification or adjustment in this case for the road width was because of the omission of the sidewalks, which is consistent with the broader community. So the lane width is the exact same. There's no safety concerns there. And then the lot sizes, there was a comment about density. The lot sizes are 6,000 square feet. Compared to the other lots in this area, they're 4,000. So we were originally proposing a more dense subdivision, and then based off the comments we received in 2017, we increased the lot size to respond to those comments. So there's more space on these lots than others to accommodate the propane.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. Oh, and staff would like to
weigh in. I just want to add that the project was referred to the building division, and these elements will be reviewed at the time of building permit issuance by their division.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Oh, would you have some questions?
I did hear a few other questions in there as far as max shared amenities, and I'm not sure who the best person to answer that would be, but just in terms of availability of shared amenities and at what point they're maxed out. Maybe that would be to Mr. Coogan, right?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. Right at the moment, so the way the amenities through an HOA are maintained and increases through the reserve study, and our current board has done a great job of increasing our assessments, including maximizing to the state limit our special assessments to ensure that our amenities are available to our current residents and future residents. So the issue is that the way that those are funded is through the assessments that are paid by members. And so if, I think to your point, if there were new folks coming into the association that were not paying the same amenity or assessment fees that the current members are, that we would see a over time degrading of those amenities to the point where there would be an unfunded liability both for them and for all of the existing members.
Understood there, that, you know, potential of use without paying in fair share. But let's go the other way then. I mean, that's really to another challenge here, going backwards to the kind of existing deficiencies that I think get at some of the challenge of joining. To what degree then these new lots need to reasonably share in existing reserve deficiencies because fees have been low over a period of time that the new lots aren't really responsible for, or haven't benefited from the new residents of new lots? I mean, I think it goes kind of both ways, what's reasonable going forward and what's reasonable to pay for existing deficiencies that have been pointed out through the correspondence and record.
Well, and I mean, we are not asking, nor would I think it be appropriate to say that all of these amenities need to be brought up to a certain standard that is much higher than they are now by this development. I mean, I'm keenly aware of how much margin there is in development, and that would be unfairly burdening the new development. But I think it's fair to say that every new resident that comes in needs to pay for their fair share of the amenities as they are and the future of the amenities. I mean, none of us who bought into the association got a discount because the amenities weren't all that we hoped they would be when we moved in. I mean, I've lived there since 2018, and my assessments have gone up every year. So I think that the other point that I wanted to make is that we have two sub-associations in the ranch already, okay. And they handle, similar to what HR Holdings has recommended, they take care of everything within their association. And in both cases, they pay much higher assessments to their sub-association than they do to the HROA, but they are also full members of the HROA. So okay. They pay our assessments as well. And that gives them access to the roadway to their property and to all of the amenities.
Understood, and thank you for that, because that was something I wanted to point out. I've been part of HOAs, and they've had multiple levels and kind of subgroups within a larger holding, and so I didn't see that as an abnormal proposition, so I'm glad to hear you already see that within the ranch, and that's not something new for you either. So important for everyone to realize that's not a new concept. It's just kind of the details of the share there that are yet to be worked out. And then the other question I kind of heard someone mention is the potential for other parcels. I heard both, I believe the applicant say this is maybe one of the last developable parcels, but I think it was you that said there are some other parcels, and we see the general plan allowing up to 2,900 homes, and you said, I believe there are roughly 2,000 now, which would allow for roughly 800 more homes, less this 50 whatever means, give or take 800. So there must be a few more developable parcels that this discussion may be relevant to.
That's absolutely right, Commissioner. In fact, this property is surrounded by developable land. Okay. Many of our residents are disappointed when they find out that the driving course is actually the golf driving course. It's not HROA property. It's private property that just hasn't been developed yet, also on equestrian. So really, to your point, what we're doing is setting a precedent. And, you know, ultimately, if the precedent were that new development could come in and not contribute to the HROA by being members of the HROA, then the development might become financially insolvable. And then, frankly, from what I have read and been told, it reverts back to the county. So if we're not funded at a level that is sustainable, then it becomes the county's problem. And I don't think anyone wants that.
Thank you for that. I'll leave that alone. But we are seeing it in the case of some services districts, and I expect we may well see it more. So I don't believe that's a crazy claim. That's all for me for now. Okay. Yvonne.
Thank you. I just have a series of questions that I'm looking for confirming answers to. And I'll start with parking, because I think we can check that off our list. The parking issue seems to be in compliance with two vehicles per parcel, the 25-foot driveway, and the future addition of additional storage within the community. Is that accurate?
Lane Southern, planning staff, that's correct.
I get to check that one off. Okay, the roadway and mitigation of the roadway during construction, it sounds as though we have a path to amend any future motion here to include maintaining the road condition during the construction process. Is that correct?
Yes, and if you would like, off Commissioner Wyatt's recommendation, Public Works has sent me a revised condition to address repair to roadway damage.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So up on the screen, you can see here, we added the heading for repair roadway damage, and we added numbers 5 and 6, A through F, and 7. So condition 5 will read, ongoing condition of approval valid for the life of the project. The applicant shall be responsible for restoring all public roads, easements, right-of-ways, and infrastructure such as signs, utility poles, and cattle guards within the public right-of-ways that have been damaged due to project-related activities or traffic through implementation of a road restoration plan. The applicant shall enter a roadway repair agreement with County Public Works Department in a form acceptable to County Council and secure approval from HROA. Number 6, prior to commencing any work, the applicant shall prepare a road restoration plan, RRP. Road restoration shall be to original or near original condition and undertaken in a timely manner in consultation and to the satisfaction of Public Works. At a minimum, the RRP shall provide a video log or photo log of the proposed haul route to establish baseline or before condition of the route. Determine the current pavement condition index, PCI, of the haul route roadways. Identify any roadway operational constraints specific to the proposed haul route and provide corrective recommendations. If needed, propose locations to place traffic axle counters to measure project-related traffic. Identify the funding mechanism for identified roadway upgrades and ongoing maintenance. The proposed project impacting the roadway will be responsible for all costs. ensure all identified operational corrective recommendations as identified in the RRP shall be completed prior to commencement of project-related construction activities. And for number 7, prior to final inspection, the applicant shall meet with the Public Works Department to review the baseline road conditions and identify sections of public right-of-way that may have been damaged by the project work forces. At that time, the project owner shall establish a schedule to complete the repairs or compensate the HROA in accordance with the roadway repair agreement.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, any repairs to the road will be done by HR Holdings or by the HROA, and then the HR Holdings will reimburse the HROA. How does that work?
GR Beard, Public Works. So as written, Lane, if you can go back to that slide. Looks like it would be like a reimbursement to HROA, but obviously this is a condition at your purview, so we can modify that accordingly too to have the holdings, the applicants, as a developer, do that repair.
Okay. Yep. A few more questions on that?
I think the developer wanted to, well, if there's more questions, stay up here.
We're open to both, so maybe we could include both in there.
Okay.
Either doing the repairs ourselves or working with the HROA.
Okay.
Just a few nitpicks if we're going to approve this, possibly. Just shall include on number 6, shall include blah, 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 blah. At a minimum, RRP shall include or have.
Sorry. Did you also want to weigh in on these conditions? I mean, I guess since we're...
Yes, I am so sorry to interrupt, yeah. Commissioner Wyatt, and thank you, because I think this really does chase after it. We had just a little bit of a semantics question, because obviously HROA roads are not public roads.
That was my next point.
Perfect.
Yes.
There we go. I knew
right.
You were on it.
We're close, but we're not quite there. Yeah. So let's just put include there to close that, and let's deal with the non-public roads. We don't have any public right-of-way here. We have private. And this is really to our problem. We don't have public roads. And we're trying to do this and help in an area that's a little gray. Yeah. Want to solve this for us, sir?
Jared Beard, Public Works. So, yeah, it's a subtle distinction, but because the roads, technically, it's a gated community, so it doesn't receive public traffic, obviously, outside of the development, but, you know, it's for the benefit of the public within the development. So that's why that public language is in there. But certainly, if you want to modify that to say private, you know, by all means, just want to make that distinction. It's a little weird.
It's a little weird, and we're all in agreement here of where we want to go, but we're a little dicey gray. So can we think of something else that would meet our intent and not call it public right away? Where it's not quite. We don't want to take this on to public. I don't want to give an indication that this is public right away and we're responsible for it.
Maybe HR.
This is some of our problem and potential bigger problem ahead.
Maybe HROA maintained roads. Okay.
So we'll substitute that in. Maybe whether staff can work on that and we could look at it again before approval.
Yeah, and I think if we concluded with that, the condition, I think you were kind of running through the conditions, so I kind of want to see that through.
Okay. So, no, thank you for the robust staff and instantaneous staff work and robust dialogue up here to resolve that, because that's important. And the last item on my punch list has to do with HOA and sub-association. In reading the staff reports and the backup documentation and listening to the presentations today, I felt as though the sub-association would be the residents of this subdivision be responsible for maintaining their own infrastructure related to the construction of said subdivision, right? Not the HROA. I understand the need for these future residents to be members of the HROA, but it's very clear to me that it's a timing issue, and I don't know if I believe it's a purview issue for us, other than strongly encouraging the developer and the community to enter into a private agreement about timing for HRA. I'm sorry, HOA membership. I don't know where we go from here as a planning commission, so just wanted to throw that out there as well. And I just wanted confirmation that I'm on the right path with that.
Yes, that is what you stated is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just along those lines of big picture, because we look at this stuff quite often, and I still have a lot of process questions, and maybe if this is the first time you've been involved in this. So it sounds like there have been negotiations since 2017, so that's 8 years, and that's to get to this point with the maps. But if someone could just give a high level, you know, for the concerned residents, of all the steps that are down the road where a lot of these other issues can get worked out. For example, what comes next? And because what I'm hearing, I think, is the only reason this HOA issue is not completely hammered out and hashed out and addressed right here is they, I think you've been through five managers, and there's been a lot going on since 2017. But isn't this a timing issue where this is about to expire? So we need to kind of move forward on making the map. But then what comes next in the process of before things are even built?
So are you referring to what conditions come prior to recordation of the map?
Right.
I'd be happy to pull those up for everyone. Okay. So obviously the condition that I read in, so prior to commencing any work, we talk about the road restoration plan, we'll still work on the revision to the word public as appropriate, if maybe I can have some time to get with Public Works soon. So for improvement maintenance, prior to map recordation, the developer shall establish a property owners association or other organized and perpetual mechanism to ensure inspection, operation, and maintenance of the following improvements. The public emergency access roadway from A Street to Ibis Lane, the shared stormwater treatment facilities for public or common area improvements, as stipulated in the private stormwater conveyance management and maintenance system exhibit, or other agreement acceptable to the Department of Public Works, and the shared storm drainage basins, inlets, pipes, fences, landscaping, and other related appurtenances for public or common area improvement. Improvement plans. So improvement plans also come prior to recordation of the map. They'll be reviewed by the Public Works Department for consistency, as well as planning staff, with the conditions which come prior to recordation. Prior to acceptance of the improvements, the stormwater operations and maintenance plan and general notice must be updated to reflect as-built changes approved by the county and re-recorded with the county clerk recorder as amendments to the original document. On our additional map sheet.
And at what point do CCNRs need to be recorded? Is that also? That's right.
So the developer shall submit proposed covenants, conditions, and restrictions for the subdivision to the County Department of Planning and Building for review and approval, and shall establish property owners association or other more organized and perpetual mechanism to ensure adequate maintenance in a form acceptable to planning and building and in conformance with the requirements of the State Department of Real Estate. So these CCNRs would be required prior to recordation of the final map.
So even if we move forward today, because it sounds like maybe we don't even have authority to require an HOA at this moment, this is still going to be addressed before the map is
absolutely
recorded. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So I just wanted to try to give a big picture. I don't know if I made it more confusing, but does anyone else have questions or comments?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
It's a good old-fashioned boondoggle, huh? So a couple questions on the setbacks, the 25-foot. What's the surrounding area right now? Is it 100-foot setbacks, 30-foot setback? I mean, how far off are these 25-foot marks?
I can answer to that. So setbacks can depend on the size of the specific parcel. For example, if it's over an acre, the side and rear setbacks will be 30 feet, whereas if it's under an acre, the side and rear setbacks could be as small as 5 feet on the sides and 10 in the rear. For front setbacks specifically, generally a front setback is at 25 feet, and I do believe that goes for parcels over or under an acre. The caveat here is with the planned development, It's written in that you can have the variable front setback. It does give specific guidelines. I do believe it's 16 feet for garages, though you can have 10 feet for the primary residence. And it asks for a variable setback. You might see in the site plan, the applicant has proposed building envelopes, which incorporate that variable site plan. So as you go lot to lot, no two lots will, at their meeting point, have two setbacks at 10 feet. There will be a buffer where it goes 10 feet on one side and some 25 feet for the garage on the other half of their parcel. And the next parcel will be the garage on one side and then the house on the other to allow for the variable front setback.
Okay, so they do kind of conform with the surrounding area of the plan development currently.
The entire plan development would conform with that. Residences in the greater area, which most of which aren't planned developments, would have the general 25-foot front setback.
Okay. And then there was some talk about the right-of-way shrinking down and less circulation for pedestrians. So what's the intent there of the circular? Is there no area for people to walk? That would sound like one of the concerns.
So for the curb gutter and sidewalk waiver, we do generally rely on First Public Works making the findings that or supporting the request. Our findings are that the waiver would be consistent with the greater community, as sidewalks are missing from a large portion of Heritage Ranch.
Okay. And then I had a question, I guess, for Mr. Cogan. You said even as late as this morning, sound like there were some positive conversations. It seems to me the whole problem is the association. And I'm sure that's the biggest problem you guys have is, and I can understand you're going to have community within your community possibly using your amenities, or you're going to have to hire security guards to keep them out of your amenities, I guess, which would be even a bigger cost to the place. So what, was the talk of you guys getting together on that? Because it sounds like from the applicant, the intent is possibly going to join the HRA, but not for some time.
Thank you, Commissioner Avila. I think what our concern has been, and you know, I'm a veteran of policy nuance, and my concern is the commitment to join the HROA sounds a little bit like we will have the association, the sub-association, join the HROA, which is all well and good as long as the sub-association is in place. The problem, and what we have seen with our two sub-associations that already exist, is that the sub-association is dependent on members of that development getting elected to the board, serving on the board, and then hiring a management company. And you can condition that all you want, but you can't force people to serve on an HOA board. We have tried. And so the challenge becomes if those future residents are not HROA members, then there's no relationship with the people who are actually causing the use. And we've been scratching our heads as to how we would even let them onto the property if we don't know who they are. I mean, it is 2 miles from our gate to this site, the closest gate. And, you know, again, we maintain 14 different gates up at Heritage Ranch. And those are individual gate arms, but it is a huge development, and I kind of liken it to, I don't know if there are places in Paso Robles or Atascadero where there are county pockets of undeveloped land, but there were in San Jose when I worked for the city of San Jose, and the county would come up with a great development plan and then give it to the city, like, hey, now you have more residents. But in that, there was a commitment that, you wouldn't say to the city of San Jose, they're not your residents. Like, they're not going to pay property tax. They're not going to pay sales tax. And that's the concern, is that we may wind up having an ongoing unfunded liability with these 52 new residents who we're excited to have join us as long as they're joining as members of the HROA.
All right, very good. Thanks.
Anyone else have questions or comments? Or
Go ahead. You, me first. Well, I appreciate this. And what did you just call this? A true boondoggle or some such? I guess I just add on that. The comment so noted for Mr. Coogan about HOAs and the challenges and the opportunities of HOAs and these private associations. I really see HOAs as kind of this opportunity for neighborhood scale democracy in action. And it comes with all the opportunities and all of the challenges of that and deficiencies of it. And I've also been an interested observer of both of these. And we're right here at it, where there aren't real exact answers, and there are a lot of ways to go about this. And I'm comfortable approving this project today. This is outside of our purview. I'm sorry to say, council has explained, and I agree that this is something the neighborhood will have to duke out for better and worse. And I'll remind people who want government out of their business, this is a case where this is government out of your business. This is going to be for you to work out for better and worse. So keep it in mind when people complain about government being too much in your business and wanting to go there. I don't hear. I'm sorry, it's going to be difficult to handle, I think, but your job ahead. And so I think it's very interesting, and we're going to see more of it, this question about handling existing kind of liabilities and fund deficiencies. And so that's some of the challenge. Homeowners benefit from lower monthly dues, but meanwhile, maintenance funds aren't being replenished and everything's getting more expensive. And we're going to see this at the government municipal level and the private homeowners level. We're already seeing it at our quasi-government entities, our municipal service providers. Right now, the county is has just taken on the San Simeon Community Services District because they've found themselves unable to meet their liabilities and obligations for provisions of water and sewer to a small number of residents. So the scenario Mr. Coogan's described isn't really out there. And so we're seeing it now, and I'm afraid we will see more of it. It's some of our challenge that as everything gets more expensive. So sorry, but I do think that's something we all need to acknowledge that we're all going to be facing in various ways. I'd like to point out that if we had an inclusionary housing ordinance countywide with a mandate for some number of inclusionary affordable homes, we could get some handful of homes that would be deed restricted affordable out of this. We may well get some lower cost homes, but it's not likely any of these homes are going to be affordable to even moderate income people. So they're still likely to be above that, even with relatively smallish lots, too small to some of you today. And even with manufactured housing that may provide some factory-built savings, they're probably not even going to be moderate affordable. So we miss an opportunity there without a countywide inclusionary housing ordinance that we once had that could have had a few homes at least mandated affordable. I didn't hear it. I'm really pleased to see the proposal for manufactured housing here. I didn't see a word against manufactured housing in any of the correspondence or for anyone, which pleases me because I do see quite a bit of prejudice against factory-built manufactured housing in the general realm. So thank you all for not bringing that out. If that was a subtext here, I didn't hear it or feel it. So I'm really pleased with that, and that's what's been presented here that may make this development a little more affordable and possibly affordable then to at least some moderate income families. As far as the exceptions, we have 4 exceptions proposed here, and that's been some of our issue where we do have purview, and I'm completely fine with the lesser right-of-way from 50 down to 42. That sounds like the road width is still the same. I have some difficulty as
Mike has explained with the exception for curb, gutter, and sidewalk. As someone very interested in multi-mobility and sustainable mobility, not having sidewalks that's safe for walking or bike lanes is problematic for me. But when we have here a small bit of ground that connects to roads that don't have any of that either, I'm comfortable with that, although a bit conflicted, especially when this may be precedent setting for some 800 more homes and subdivisions around, that we miss some opportunity for safer walking and biking opportunities. But I don't think this is the place to put that into play when they don't connect up to much. So I'm uncomfortable waiving that, but comfortable enough here. The other exceptions, the deeper drainage basin so we can have less space for it makes sense. And then the variable front setbacks, I'm very comfortable with that. 10 feet is still a fair setback. While we're not allowing lawns, to save water and landscaping is some of our highest water use for residential parcels. You know, it's much higher water use for landscaping often than home use for toilets and showers. So less kind of landscape is a way to minimize that use. So actually the smaller setbacks and front setbacks actually meet that purpose. And in a time when water is becoming more and more precious and costly, I think that's actually a benefit, not a detriment to the proposal. So I would just like to go over a few more notes. This is infill development, and I would actually have preferred to see the original proposal with more lots. More parcels, more smaller lots. These 6,000 square foot lots are still relatively large for an infill opportunity by my standard. So to those of you who want more affordable housing and pushed for these larger lots, again, this is on you. Our code would have allowed us to develop many more homes on smaller lots, but the developer actually listened to you and has proposed fewer. If I could double this here and had a magic wand to overrule all of your preference, I would have. So there we go again. That's the developer and the process listening to the neighborhood in some ways to all of our detriment. So otherwise, I would like to look at 18J because there was a question from the developer on that. And I would like to just make sure our condition on the road segments reads right because we made a few changes I didn't get to look at.
Okay, and just to keep us on track, housekeeping, we usually take a break at 10:30. Would it make sense to take that break now so you can update the conditions, or do you feel ready? You don't need it. Okay, do we want to plow through the break, or do we want to take the break now? How do we feel?
Let's plow.
Okay, yep. Plowing. Okay, just everyone, go forth. I have to do the housekeeping, so go for it. All right.
Okay. As requested, here are the revised conditions. We'll start with, we read through conditions 5, 6, and 7, but I went back in as requested and changed anywhere that it referenced public roads to Heritage Ranch Owners Association roads. So that occurred right here on number 6. That's number 5. And then on number 7, identify sections of Heritage Ranch Owners Association right-of-way.
Okay, thanks for that to staff. And applicants okay with that? And that meets the intent of the association? And we're comfortable with that? Red? Okay, good. And then what about 18J? Where'd we go on that? That a request from the applicant. Where's staff come in on that?
Yeah. So the numbers are going to be a little off now.
Right.
So
what was 18J?
21J now. Okay. And we did make a revision after a little consultation with Public Works staff. We added as applicable. We felt that at the time of Public Works reviewing the additional map sheet for this project and after maybe an opportunity for them to consult with their management, they'll be able to properly address the needs for these conditions to be referenced on the additional map sheet. Whereas they may be able to move forward with satisfying this condition at that time without incorporating some of the measures which shouldn't be on the additional map sheet but would otherwise be had we not added as applicable.
Okay, so some flexibility there. Council and Public Works are okay with that? Yeah, and that meets the intent of applicant. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Okay, I'll after we hear from the commissioner from the district, if he wants to make a motion, that's all I have. Thanks.
I'll be brief.
Go for it.
As brief as possible. So I appreciate the community coming forward today, seeing some old coworkers. Love this county. I believe we've had a pretty in-depth dialogue. We've fleshed out, I think, one of the three big concerns for the community. That was the roadway maintenance, the HOA piece, other than us strongly recommending future HOA membership by individual parcel owner. That's as far as we can go, and I'm sorry, it's not our purview. But I do support the project. I have many friends that live in the area and different configurations of residential units and the curb gutter sidewalk issue. It's well defined in the community, so I'm supportive of the project as amended. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to make a motion, or am I hearing, are folks ready, or is there more discussion?
No, I'm ready to make a motion. So I'm supportive as well. Unless there were, did you have any other comments?
Okay. Well, we can have discussion after the motion.
Yeah. Can I go ahead and have the motion put up on the screen, please? And I'm making this motion just, you know, obviously the HOA is the big piece. I think that we were having trouble coming to kind of a way to solve this problem. But I'm assuming the developer, their assurances are going to go a long way to, you know, hopefully joining the association sooner rather than later. So with that, I would go ahead and make the motion to approve SUB 2020-00026. Track map 3110, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and B and the conditions listed in an Exhibit C. And then do I have to put something about the revised, that 18J or whatever it is, 21J in there as well?
Those would be the revised conditions in Exhibit C.
Okay, perfect. All right. And also to consider in the determination that the project does not require additional environmental review pursuant to CEQA guidelines, Section 15183.
Okay, I hear a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any final discussion or thoughts?
Just a comment on, sounds like you guys are maybe working things out. So, you know, like Ann said, we can't be part of it. This is a whole separation with the private community. And unless you build a Berlin Wall around that place, you're going to have to work something out, you know? So I think nobody is going to want to live inside of a wall. So, and nobody's going to start, you know, guarding the launch ramp all night long. So I think you guys can work it out. It'll probably be a little harder road, but it sounds like you're making some movement now, and maybe it's a better cohesion with the managers willing to listen. So that's the only comment I had.
I just want to echo those comments in that, you know, don't forget, you do have your HOA board, and that is your elected body, and I'm sure with Jim at the helm, there will be many more public meetings and many more opportunities for dialogue and comment. It sounds like all parties are amenable to coming to the table, and that's where a lot of these issues will hopefully play out. So I'm proud of the work of our team. I think we've gone as far as we can go. So if we could have a vote, please.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, thank you, everyone. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Let's come back. Let's be wild and come back at 10:45. All right. Thank you, everyone, for that robust discussion. Now we are on to the next item, hearing to consider a request by Monarch Dunes Golf Resort LLC for a conditional use permit. And since I see staff is here, I'm just going to let you take over. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark Lurie, Planning and Building. Presenting today is Elizabeth Moreno, project planner, and in support, Carrie Brown, supervising planner.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Moreno, and I'll just like to apologize. I'm just getting over a cold, so you'll hear me cough and blow my nose maybe. But I'm here today to present a request by Monarch Dunes Golf Resort for a conditional use permit. The conditional use permit is for approval for a 2,675 square foot indoor driving range building with three tees. The proposed indoor driving range will not increase the parking on site. The hours of operation will remain consistent with the rest of the golf course, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Here's a vicinity map. The project's located at 1606 Trilogy Parkway in Napomo. Here's a land use category map. The project zoned recreation and is surrounded by commercial, retail, and office professional, and also surrounded by other recreation land use categories. Here we have an aerial view of the project site. The proposed driving range will be located near the existing outdoor driving range and the practice green. As you can see here, here's the existing outdoor driving range, and here's the practice green, and the proposed building will be located here. Currently, the outdoor driving range is comprised of 20 tees. Three of the outdoor tees will be relocated into the proposed indoor driving range, and 17 outdoor tees will remain outside, resulting in a zero net change in the use and in the parking. Here's the applicant's site plan. Here at the bottom, you can see a little bit of the street. It's Via Tesoro Place. And here's the practice green, and the proposed building is just north of that. Here we have the elevations. This is the front of the building. These three doors are represent like three of the T's. And then here is a bathroom here on the side of the building. Then here we have the elevations. Here's the back, here's the right, and then here's the left. And then here's the floor plan. And then here on the bottom right corner is the restroom. The proposed colors will include evergreen for the building and trim and charcoal for the metal roof. The proposed driving range design will be consistent with the other associated structures in the Monarch Dunes Golf Resort as specified in the Monarch Dunes specific plan. Staff did receive a letter from a concerned neighbor on Vista Tesoro Place. The letter expressed concerns regarding traffic, adding additional services, and longer operating hours. And in response to that, the addition to the indoor driving range will not expand the facilities because the applicant is swapping out three outdoor tees with three indoor tees. Additionally, the hours will remain the same as the golf course, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. So with that, staff recommends Planning Commission find the project exempt from CEQA and approve the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get started, does anyone have any ex parte communication to disclose? Okay, seeing none, does anyone have questions for staff at this time?
You have some first? It's your district? No. Okay, I don't know if we're going to hear an applicant presentation, so maybe applicant will describe this, but to get it out there. I'm not sure what's driving this huge thing, if it's the same number of tees and the same number of hours, and I suspect this is what we'll hear from the neighborhood, that this could allow for some nighttime use at some point. That's not currently being proposed, but otherwise, why build this huge structure when we have pretty good weather here in daytime operations?
Elizabeth Renault with Planning and Building. Commissioner Wyatt, the applicant does have that kind of information, so I'll let the applicant respond.
Okay, we'll hear it.
Okay, so before you go, sorry. Okay, I see no other questions for staff, so what I am going to do now is open public comment. And since the applicant is already here.
Chair Shaw, I don't know if you want to go over ex parte.
We did.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry.
Okay. We're going to have the applicant speak. 12 minutes on the clock. Thank you. All right.
Thank you for having me. My name is Rory Dahl. I'm the director of golf and assistant general manager of Monarch Dunes. In addition, I operate my own golf academy, which I own, RDGA, which is operated on the premises since 2014. So I work in two capacities, one for the golf course, one for myself. Here's a representative of the golf course today. Staff did an amazing job presenting the project, so I don't have anything further on that side of things. However, to answer the question as to why a building, there are certain things within golf instruction that we can do when we are indoors or do have access to TVs, pressure plates, cameras, TrackMan type technology. Even though it's in Little Nipomo, right, we have an amazing facility. We've had, we work with Swedish LPGA Tour players. We work with college players around the country. We've got scholarship programs where we put kids through college. We're doing a lot of things there, and to have a home, a base, a facility that we can do that out of, that on rainy days, you know, we do occasionally have some, like today, or, you know, foggy cold. It's a little colder over there on the mesa than it is here, and some exposure to sun. I would certainly enjoy, as you can tell by the hat tan line, having a little bit of shade. So there's a lot of uses. It truly is. The building does not expand the scope of what we do. It simply enhances what we can do. So the business will continue to operate as per usual. However, it allows us to provide a much higher level of instruction in golf based in, you know, activities on the Central Coast and to those that travel here to take part in that. So with that, I'll regress and take any questions.
And I see Commissioner Wyatt has a question. Does anyone? Okay. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, one more follow-up question. Yeah. Just looked like from the correspondence or added conditions, there was some screening added. It is a fairly large building and not a lot of articulation or design detail. So could staff or you help us understand how this will be screened so it's not visible to some of the nearby residents or passersby, or how that's planned?
Sure. Elizabeth Moreno with Planning and Building. Commissioner Wyatt, condition number 5 does have the applicant submit landscaping plans to screen the southeast of the driving range from the residents on that on Vista Tesoro. So the applicant will be working with HOA to come up with a plan that they are both they can both agree on, and then the applicant will submit that landscaping plan at the time of application submittal for their building permits, and so that we'll be able to review those. It's something that the applicant and the HOA, as long as they're okay with that, we're okay with it too.
Okay, so it'll be kind of to the HOA to agree to that, or yes, do their own negotiating. Yes. There,
yeah,
with
yeah, the
golf course that's, yeah, building it, which must be a subgroup.
So the applicant did submit kind of like a preview of that, and I think it was around 6 trees. However, the condition is kind of more, is written in a way that provides them a little bit more flexibility. So if they want to change that or add additional trees, they can.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's great, since, yeah, that's a fairly large blank wall there,
yeah,
that some people are going to have to look at. So, yeah, thank you. That's all for me. Thanks.
Okay. I think you can take a seat for now. I think you're good. Do we have other speaker slips?
Yes, we have Bob Price with Woodland Masters Association.
Okay, so would this be a 5-minute, you have 5-minute presentation? Thank you.
Good morning. I won't need 5 minutes, but I'll take three. My name is Bob Crace. I'm the Woodlands Master Association HOA president, and I've been authorized by the board to represent their views today. The golf course is a commercial member of the HOA and subject to the CCNRs of the HOA. The CCNRs require that all improvements, all buildings, be approved by the Design Review Committee before going to government or going for permit. So unfortunately, the golf course has skipped that step and has not gone through the DRC for approval prior to being here today. And I know the county is not subject to our CCNRs. We've been through that a number of times. But the county approved our specific plan and respects the specific plan, expects people to follow it, and will look at projects compared to the specific plan. Now, you know, the plan sets forth the development standards, provide an environmentally sound and visually pleasing project. They look at a lot of things. They look at the character, the site planning, massing and design, signage, lighting, parking, anything that's in the specific plan. The Design Review Committee compares against an applicant's new project. And then they negotiate. And once the DRC and the applicant decide and agree, they have a compliant building. So if we do our job and bring it to you, then it makes your job easier. So if the process works right, the applicant shows up here, asks for a permit, the Design Review Committee says this building's compliant, and you move on. If the applicant goes to the Design Review Committee and gets a negative, then they would be here to explain exactly why this project doesn't comply with the specific plan. So again, it makes your job easier. The materials that you have before you today are insufficient for DRC review. We need more of a landscaping plan. We need to talk about parking. We need to see colors. We need to look at the building to make sure it's not just one big box. It's supposed to be articulated. That's in the specific plan. So I have a simple request for you today, and that is that you table this permit, ask for more details and design from the applicant, and encourage the applicant to go through the CCNR required design review process, or at least let the applicant know that an approval from the DRC would go a long way in moving the permit forward. So that's all I wanted to say. I'm just here to represent the CCNRs. We have 12 commercial members right now. We're going to have 30 to 40 when fully developed. We can't have commercial members ignoring the CCNRs. It's just, we can't. I'll sit here and I'll be available to answer any questions after you hear from the rest of the people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Leslie Bennett, followed by Alan McGee.
Morning. I'm Leslie Bennett. I am speaking as a resident of the Monarch Dunes community. I live on Trailview Place, which is connected to Vista Tesoro, the location that we're discussing today. I have to go through that particular point where the location, where the building is to be located, on a daily basis. I have to go up and get mail at the club and to use the amenities. So it's a high traffic area. Things that happen there impact not just Vista Tesoro, but the rest of the community. Parking for the new training facility is reported to be covered by eliminating tee boxes. We have an issue already with parking to address all of the amenities that the golf club uses. First, the parking code for the original 18-hole golf course, the clubhouse, and the restaurant is 127 spaces. The parking lot there now has 120 There is an addition, the 12-hole challenge course, is additional golf course. It has 12 holes. It has the driving range associated with it. And the parking code will require an additional 120 parking spaces. Golf doesn't own that many spaces. They don't lease or control that many golf spaces. They're already in deficit for parking requirements by code. The path of travel from the main lot, the main parking lot, to where the tee boxes are is about 1,000 feet. And from Vista Tesoro, it's about 100 feet to that building. People are not going to be using the parking lot, first because it'll be full, secondly because it's so much closer and more convenient to go off Vista Tesoro. And that increases parking issues, safety issues for people being unloaded there where there's traffic coming through, where the road is narrow. It actually narrows at that point and makes it harder for people to stop and park. And the new training facility, it's going to make the bad situation worse. They're going to increase traffic. They're going to have additional people coming for the academy. The situation right now is a little iffy. It'll get worse with higher traffic. And so I'm asking that the permit be denied just on the basis of lack of parking. If you look at the code, parking is insufficient. So that's my view of the situation.
Thank you for those comments. Do we have another speaker?
Alan McGee, followed by Paul. I don't know the last name.
Hello. I'm Alan McGee. I live at 1545 Vista Tesoro Place, and almost directly across from the proposed site, right across the street. And anyway, lived there for 9 years now. And as Shay, as our Monarch Dunes community approaches the build out of the Shay homes, and retail has moved in, small business ventures are added. We have the approved hotel now, which is just on the other side of the range, driving range. And we have to believe that our community is going to experience a significant increase in traffic, both auto and pedestrian. Additionally, the proposed outdoor driving range, I think, is going to increase the traffic, just because there's going to be, I believe, there'll be more academy participants that show up. I'm sure Rory is hoping that there'll be more. There will be an increased demand for safe parking. And as Leslie talked about, we really don't have enough parking now. You see a lot of people parking on the streets already. There's overflow. So they're going to go to the street and park. And that narrows the access. So we're talking about both long-term and short-term parking. Short-term meaning, what I mean is, a lot of parents bring their children to the academy, drop them off, and then go and do errands, what have you, while they're in their class. But I've seen them pull up to the road on Vista Tesoro. It's a quick drop off. And the child will pull the clubs out of the back of their car and cross Vista Tesoro, really not paying a whole lot of attention sometimes to the traffic because they're excited to get to class. Unfortunately, they have to cross Vista Tesoro when they do that, and it's just going to get I've seen a couple of close calls already, just because it's right in front of my house. So anyway, I think that we can do better as far as providing safe traffic or a safe drop-off zone for some of the children. Somehow, so that they have a better experience. So I disapprove of the proposal as it stands right now. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Our next speaker, please.
our final request to speak is Paul Ganger, and I apologize if I said that incorrectly.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. Pretty much the same message that everybody else has given you. I live at 1557 Vista Tesoro, which is immediately across the street from this project. One thing that I didn't see was, I don't know how tall this building is, but it looks to be pretty massive. My primary concern, because I live so close and I see the same things that other people have talked to you about, people stopping, dropping the kids off. Vista Tesoro at the West End narrows, and it's also a steep street. My driveway is steep. I have problems backing out of my driveway and seeing cars coming down from the west side. And that's where parents will stop and drop their kids off. It blocks visibility so that I can't see traffic. Conversely, late in the afternoon, if you're driving Vista Tesoro from the east going west, looking into the sun, it is blinding. And again, an unsafe situation where the most convenient place to drop kids off or convenient place to park is in front of my house. It just doesn't seem to me that good planning gives access to a commercial venture from a residential street. I think you need to figure out, somebody needs to figure out how to keep that commercial traffic from using Vista Tesoro to access this property. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you say that was our last speaker? Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and close public comment and bring it back. I'm gonna try to bring up just some of the questions I heard, but please, if folks heard other things, chime in. One question was, how tall is this thing?
Elizabeth Moreno with Planning and Building, Commissioner Shaw. The building will be 17 feet.
Tall. Okay. Yeah. All right. Did you want
to give a little bit of context as well? I can speak to a couple different questions I'm sure you'll have, but with regard to the height of the building, there is a large embankment that drops down about 12 feet or so from where the houses sit. So the building, when we did work with the HOA design review committee in 2020 and 2021, we made the adjustments to the building to mitigate the pitch roof to a flat roof to better alleviate some of the views of those homeowners and to match the overall aesthetic of the buildings that exist within the community, because most of them are flat roofs. So relative to the way that the land sits, it is a 17-foot height at the front, and it's 13 feet pitched at the backside. That does sit in a bowl, essentially, where the street is about 12 to roughly 14 feet higher than that height of grade of where the building would sit.
Okay. All right. Before we get further down this road, so I'm hearing you did work with the design review committee. I'm hearing you didn't work with the design review committee. First, I'm going to ask our attorney, what is our purview? Are we required to take it into account? Are we allowed to take that into account? What's our role in enforcing this design review committee step?
Yes, so Bendorf County Council. So to the extent that this is an outside committee that's through the Homeowners Association, we don't enforce requirement that they confer and satisfy those provisions. To the extent that there are design elements in our specific plan or in some other county adopted ordinance, then those are design requirements that we would impose.
Okay.
Would the Homeowners Association have recourse if we approved this and they said they didn't go follow the CC&Rs? Could they say, like, file an action against it, stop it somehow?
They could, whether or not that would hold up in court.
Okay.
We don't enforce CC&Rs. Those are a private civil issue. So anybody could file a lawsuit at any time against anybody, but whether or not that would go anywhere with court.
But they could. I mean, that would be some civil recourse they could take.
Oh, sorry. The The HOA.
The HOA could take.
That would be a private civil matter that they could address outside of the context of the county process.
Okay, I see a microphone on. Commissioner Lieberman?
My mother said it was rude to point at people. So I have a question, maybe applicant and staff. We'd seen elevation drawings. You said 17 feet. We heard 13 feet at the end of the pitch. We also heard that geographically, this proposed structure is in a bowl. So I guess I'm curious, from the folks that are living across the street in relation to street grade, how much of this building are they going to see?
Depending on the house, Vista Tesoro, as one of the homeowners said, is a sloping street going downwards. That's part of our plan, was to mitigate. A couple of the houses we'll see over the top of the building. A couple of the houses out their front view may see the, I believe it's the southeast portion of the building, the smaller wall, not the long one. However, that has been something we've been working and trying to work with the HOA with, is some mitigation on the view with some trees, something that might help break that up a little bit for them. So to answer your question, it is not a flat surface with a 17-foot tall building directly in front. There is some alleviation from the slope of the property.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I know it's not purview, but, you know, we're listening to public comment. We're listening to staff. We're listening to applicant presentation. May I just ask you why you haven't worked with the design committee recently?
So what we did in 2020, this project originally was in the Monarch Dune specific plan. The location of it was determined by the developers and the Monarch Dune specific plan. It has fire sprinklers, underground, water, electric, sewer. Everything is pulled to this location. It's not a location we chose. However, due to 2008, I believe some of the things that were going on at that time, the building was not built yet. So in 2020, this is a project that we picked up to start the process. I did start the process with the design review committee. We paid $1,000. I paid $1,000 deposit to start the review. We did an application. We got feedback from many members, all the members of the design review committee. And we got so far as the point, I met with each one of the homeowners. I have their letters that, you know, they wrote to me. Some of the changes that were made based on those letters. Parking, for example, was brought up. And we've sent out with each class for kids, we send out parking instructions to the parents. Please park, you know, in our Monarch Dunes parking lot. So we do everything on our end to make sure that they are parking in a safe manner at the Monarch Dunes golf course. We worked on the color of the building, the design of the building. We've gotten so far in the design review committee process to where we were basically working on a landscaping and the last couple colors of the building, which they had asked to keep with the overall aesthetic of other buildings that exist, which is that darker green, kind of a grass color. So at that point, COVID hit. That was about 2021 that we kind of put a pause on that while we mitigated the, you know, what COVID gave us. And so in 2024, between then, the HOA management company was replaced. So the company that was managing Monarch Dunes left. A new company came in, which meant a new board. When I was working with the county on getting up to speed, so I was getting to where is this building approved? We had to work with the county on parking. Elizabeth was very helpful. So we went through a lot of things this past year to make sure that we did meet the specific plan. Our intention has always been to go back to the board to finalize those last couple steps with the HOA on the landscaping side of things. When we went back to the board, they didn't have any records. I think that previous management company and the HOA board, they had all the emails, the records of the payments. So we are completely open to working with the HOA on you know, getting that process finalized as far as the landscaping and the aesthetics. But the building itself did have a lot of comment, and the design review committee did have their hand on that process. So that would be the short version for you.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay. Does anyone have other? Go ahead.
So I'm just assuming that this was a master plan community 15 years ago, and they did it. And it sounds like this was all part of the original plan. So where are we at with parking? Was this all figured in with the parking? Is this additional parking, or is this part of the what was planned as the build out?
Looking back at the staff reports from 2008, when the golf course was approved, they didn't analyze the parking. So they just approved the golf course, the practice green, the driving range, and the clubhouse. However, there's not a lot of information about the parking. So as approved, they do have the driving range out there. They have 20 tees. They are relocating three tees into the indoor driving range. And so the outdoor driving range will remain with 17 tees. And so there's no change in the use. So that means that we don't need to look at the parking for this project. Yeah.
Okay. And then one other question. No, that's actually it.
Okay.
Just thinking about that, though, a little bit. With this building, that means there's only going to be three people inside at any one point in time. Because if you're just replacing three T's outside, I mean, if you have an academy, there may be more people inside at any one time. Is that correct?
There could be, depending on the driving range is rarely ever full that all people are hitting. Occasionally, if there's a large tournament or something happening, there are only three bays to hit out of. Additional people in there might be staff members, something along those lines, a member of the public using the restroom. However, it is not designed for large groups of people to hit out of, as there are only three bays to hit from in general. The way that the Golf Academy has operated and my business has operated would not change. If anything, we're going to be potentially charging a little bit higher price point, maybe see traffic go down. It really depends on the season and the weather and what's going on. However, there's really expected to be no net change to the amount of people coming to this facility compared to as it stands today.
Yeah, because I kind of see there's almost like a little mini Top Golf in there, so you're not going to be having cocktails and people in there hitting. Okay, all right.
No, the kids won't be drinking.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, I was here in 2008, so I think Carrie and I were around, but I'm not sure who else in the room was then. But I have no memory of parking involved in this. I want to point out, we're here again. I'm feeling deja vu. Yeah, we have sort of residents have pointed out in existing deficiency and some parkers on private streets. So I guess, first of all, just a couple of questions. Is street parking legal or illegal in these places we're talking about parking occurring?
I'm going to refer that question to Public Works, JR.
Chair Beard, Public Works. So this area is, these roads are now county maintained roads. So as far as that goes, there is a constriction. I did look at the road section there. So there is parking allowed on one side of the road based upon the geometry of it. But there's no parking or red zones, that would prohibit parking along one side or the other.
Okay, so you're saying parking is legal where we have an issue of parkers parking?
Yes, but it wouldn't handle parking on both sides of the roadway. It would be constricted. So there are measures we can take for that. I don't see any signage, like I said, to prohibit parking on one side. So Okay. Certainly your commission could recommend that regulatory signage be put in place for that.
Okay, so that would be one opportunity. Because I get it. I like to have the parking space right in front of my house. And I don't like car doors slamming in front of my house where I might have a bedroom right next to the parking area. So I get people wanting not to have other people parking there. If it is legal, I don't think I mean, I know, in fact, we don't own the parking spaces in front of us. They're a public good. So I'm not a fan of enforcing a you can't park in front of my house thing. I hear some safety concerns, but that's on us when we create roads with parking allowed. It's something we need to think of. And were these private roads that now the county is maintaining? Or I'm not clear on that either. So I guess that's another question.
Jerry Beard, Public Works. Yeah, so as this development has been building out, there were a lot of roads that were maintained at one point in time by the HOA, but I don't know when this one was specifically taken in by the county, if it was a year ago or years ago, but so they were all private until the county accepted them, which was the intent the entire time. It was a matter of build out of the residential that was there at the time.
So that was part of the original specific plan intent. Then the county would gradually take them. There hasn't been some chaos or something that's happened out of necessity.
Correct.
Okay. Sure. Safe for the moment. Okay. So they are roads then to kind of control. So if commissioners would be willing to go there, I'm hearing one opportunity for some clarification signage to maintain safety and potentially handle some safety issues that we're hearing about. So maybe we could go there if commissioners are willing. I just have a few more comments. I mean, what I'm hearing too is typical that we have some commercial and residential conflicts. And it's really a tough one when residents are already there. But I want to let residents know over these number of years that I've been around since 2008, since some of this original stuff was approved, I'm also heard a lot of comments that this community doesn't have enough commercial, that more commercial was promised to the residents and hasn't come along. And so we see it both ways. We see commercials kind of adding impacts and challenges for residents. We also see concurrent challenges with not enough commercial, where residents buy kind of imagining they are going to have that grocery store that was planned and nearby and some of the services and things that the developer initially planned for that hasn't shown up. So I just want to point out that goes both ways and can be problematic with and problematic without. I could be comfortable with this. I don't think it's a highly attractive building, but it sounds to me that it's within a kind of low area and not much will be seen, and there is a plan and condition in for landscaping. So I think within a relatively short time, the landscaping can grow. I'm really sorry the process with the HOA and the design review hasn't worked more smoothly, but I also appreciate the challenges of the applicant with COVID in there and changing management team and now being back at square one, and where does that happen in the process? And that's not our job to figure out. So once again, I'm comfortable saying this is a neighborhood community thing. You have the authority and discretion to figure it out. So I'm okay letting you figure it out. So I'm comfortable with that. So I would like it if we could consider some condition for signage, if other commissioners would be amenable to that. That would be something we could do to enhance safety efficiencies.
Just a question, if you could explain the signage one more time. So what you're saying is if people did park on both sides, that would be a hazard, like nobody would be able to get through. So we wouldn't really be prohibiting something that isn't already physically prohibited. Am I understanding that right?
GR Beard, Public Works. Correct. Yeah. So I'm looking at aerial imagery at this point in time. So what I see is it allows currently, two lanes of travel either direction, and then one side can be parked with vehicles. Looks like, potentially, for the residential side. So what we could do, and that we've done this in other parts of this subdivision, is post signage to prohibit parking on one side of the road so that we can maintain proper ingress egress to those roadways.
Okay, and you're looking at the map, so I'm going to ask this follow-up. So what I'm hearing is sometimes people are dropping off kind of on the wrong side of the street and then kid has to cross the street. So would it be possible to put the no parking on this place where you don't want the kids to stop? I mean, of course, that's not parking as someone who's dropped my kids off late to many things, I would just argue it's not parking. I'm just stopping. But
an Eastern word, standing.
Maybe include something in the signage that might stop the dangerous drop off.
What could be done there is you just post the signage on one side of the street so that particular side of the street is prohibited from parking. And it's regulatory signage. Unfortunately, doesn't really work if you're dropping kids off because it's so momentary and temporary. But ultimately, because these are county maintained roads, the sheriff, if there's long term parking that occurs there, the sheriff can be called. Those vehicles, can be cited accordingly. Okay. And that's where the regulation comes into play.
Okay, and maybe that's just something you can work with parents on as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that we're very committed to and will continue to make a strong case for. As you said, sometimes parents are running late. Can't say it never happens, but we do strongly discourage it, and we want the parents to park in the parking lot. And for the record, to provide context, there's a crosswalk that goes from hole 12 of the challenge course over to this driving range area. After that crosswalk, as you continue up Vista Tesoro, that's where the homes end. That narrows, and there's a grass embankment, but a grassy area on either side. That is where it does get too narrow to park, and there really shouldn't be parking on either side there. Occasionally in front of the homes, you might see a car parked, people visiting, things like that. But I do think, it would be a good decision to not have parking in those grassy areas. It does get a little bit narrower. Okay. But we are committed to helping with the parking and not having kids or parents mm-hmm. be dropped off there.
Okay. I see a microphone on. Question, comment, or if anyone wants to make a motion, whatever, go for it.
Just a last comment on being careful to consider parking limitations based on safety from someone who spent time in safety. Is it safety? Is it convenience? Is it nuisance? And I don't think it's safety as much as it's convenience for parents dropping their kids off and nuisance for the people that live across the street from there. So I don't, I'm just trying to put myself in everyone's shoes. Do I want no parking in front of my home? Well, what about when my family comes from out of town for Thanksgiving in a few weeks and they need to park? So I don't think putting no parking in front of my home is something I would personally want. And if I put it across the street adjacent to the driving range, then everyone's going to park in front of my house and their kids are going to cross the street. So I don't think there's an easy solution. I see there's a need to restrict parking maybe during driving range hours, which was 7 to 9 or whatever those hours were we saw in our staff report. But I just would caution against calling it a safety issue versus what I think we're trying to accomplish, which I support.
Very good points. And I don't like to do things from up here that we haven't really considered and haven't been vetted fully out by our staff, such as let's throw a sign up, because we don't always know how that's going to affect everyone. So just putting that out there too.
Well, I have a little experience with regulatory signage. And I would let that one go because it's not going to work out for the HOA, because where the county's going to put those signs is in front of the homes, because they don't want, if you force everybody to park in front of the homes, now you've just blocked everybody's vision up and down the street. The homeowners, it's going to backfire because they're not going to want the car. They're going to want to park in front of their house. So I think that's where they're going to end up being, and then it's going to just go the wrong way, just because that's where they'll go.
Okay, so I appreciate all of those comments, and I was just bringing this up as a possible solution, so I in no way want to advocate for it. And hearing everyone's thoughts on this, I would withdraw the ideal because I appreciate those.
Yeah, it sounds like we've had a vibrant discussion. I appreciate the clarity on the design review committee. It sounds like you'll continue working with the HOA as well. I don't know if anyone's ready to make a motion on this.
Just before that, I just wanted to mention, yes, same thing, one more, that I do hope, it sounds like an effort has been made over a number of years, sounds like at least 5 or 6 of efforts with the HOA and the design review. So I'm just hearing those three things kind of coming up. The landscaping, the articulation of the structure, some of the adjacent neighbors have mentioned it's lacking much articulation, which I would also confirm looking at it, and the parking. So do hope you'll follow up independently, and those things will get sorted through the process. Yeah, and I'm comfortable. And if somebody wanted a motion, you ready to make it, or you want me to?
Go ahead.
I will. If staff will just put up the recommended motion, I'd make it. And while that's coming up, really appreciate everybody coming out. And sorry again, this process is fraught, and I hope it works out through the future. I think we've met our obligations here. So with that, I'll move that we approve the project, exempt under CEQA, pursuant to CEQA guidelines. And a notice of exemption has been prepared pursuant to the guidelines, and we approve conditional use permit NDRC 2024-00052 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Yes, I just would comment that if you've been on a golf course lately, which I have not, but my 82-year-old dad is always on a golf course, your players are aging out. So I think if you're in a golf course community, you should want the sport to thrive for the new generation to keep your neighborhood vibrant. And it's never easy to make room for a new type commercial use. But this, I think, does long-term benefit the community. And it sounds like a very innovative way to teach young people the way they now like to be taught. So I think in the end, yeah, it's going to take some wiggle room, but I think it will be a benefit to everyone. So with that, can we take a roll call?
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yep.
Commissioner Avila?
Yep.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, thank you for everyone for all your work on that.
Thank you.
Okay, one more. I am going to bring us to our next item. I'm going to give everyone time to get situated, so I'll read the full description. This is a hearing to consider a request by Ryan and Madison House for a variance to allow major grading on slopes exceeding 30% to facilitate the construction of a county fire compliant 816 LF driveway with access from Fox Canyon Lane, and utility trenching intended to serve a proposed 6,422 square foot single story family residence, a 1,131 square foot garage, three outdoor deck areas totaling 689 square feet. So I hope that gave everyone time to get situated. And yes, I will then give this over to staff.
Madam Chair, thanks, Mark. I have ex parte announcement.
Oh, yes, and we do have ex parte. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to disclose that I met with the consultant and the property owner yesterday and walked the site.
Okay.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. Presenting today is our project manager, Eric Tolley, and supervising planner, Cheryl Koo.
Good morning, Commission. Eric Tolley, Senior Planner, Planning and Building. Before you is the variance for Ryan and Madison House, NDRC 2025-0003. As you had already described, this is for grading on slopes exceeding 30% for a driveway and utility trenching to serve a proposed residence with 1,060 gross cubic yards of cut and 1,600 cubic yards of fill and 0.92 gross acres of total disturbance. This is where we're located, right off of Corbett Canyon Road. The parcel fronts along Badger Canyon Road. The side street is Fox Canyon Road, and the city of Arroyo Grande is just to the south. The site is located squarely within the residential suburban land use category. This is the aerial view. As you can see here, there is an existing residence that fronts along Badger Canyon Road and two existing barn structures, which are proposed to remain. This is the project slopes. This is why we're here today. As you can see, the driveway kind of winds up the topography up the hill to the site of the proposed residence at the top of the hill there. Proposed driveway is going to be accessing Fox Canyon Road. What's not shown here is the existing residence and two barns located to the south of the map. The variance findings, the project does not constitute any special privileges. Special circumstances do exist, that being the topography of the lot. The use is allowed and no adverse effects on the public or nearby properties, and the proposed use and variance is consistent with the general plan. Staff is recommending the adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA, along with the recommendation of approving the variance based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B. And staff is available to answer any questions you may have.
Does anyone have questions? Yes. Oh, your mic. Turn your mic.
Did you have some first? No. So you were there. You've had them all answered. Okay. So on the topic of special privilege here, sir, we have a lot that already has a house in some relatively flat grounds. Doing a Google drive-by, we've often approved variances for lots that have basically no flat building parcel. This is a fairly large parcel with a fair amount of flattish ground around the existing residence with an existing residence on it. So there's no mandate that we have to provide a space for another residence or this 7,000 square foot of stuff. So don't we have some option to call what they have good enough? I mean, they have a home there, and we're mandated to provide some reasonable use of the property. Where is our line between reasonable use and excessive use and special privilege?
Sure. No, I understand the question. Well, this proposed residence is going to serve as the primary residence. The existing residence is going to be converted to an accessory dwelling unit, which, as you know, is allowed. And the existing residence is above the 1,200 square foot that's allowed, and they're going to be conditioned to reduce that square footage, usable square footage of the existing residence to maximum 1,200 square feet. So, you know, to answer your question, is this a special privilege? I mean, whereas the slide that I have up right now, where they are proposing the home, is relatively flat. You're right. There are some other flat areas along Badger Canyon Road. I can't speculate as to why they're choosing here, other than the topography of the lot. But the purpose of this variance is for the driveway to access that allowable residence. Mm-hmm.
But so they would have some options. It would be within the realm of likelihood that the existing home is there and functional and could remain the primary, and they could add on an ADU to it within the existing flattish area.
Sure.
Without having to get a variance and having to put up a home way up there with the exception?
I don't disagree, but that is something that I will defer to the applicant on.
Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah, and maybe we hear more from the applicant, but do you have questions?
Just comment, the old house could become two ADUs if it's big enough to split into two. You have an ADU and a junior ADU, and I mean, putting myself in his shoes, he probably wants to build his house up top of the hill for a view. You can't stop him. We'd never had Hearst Castle. That's why he wanted up there.
Look how well. Okay. All right. So that's fine.
Okay, we're gonna now go to public comment. We're gonna open up public comment, and we have the applicant. Okay, here we go. Hi.
Good morning again, Ian McCarville with Kirk Consulting. I have a presentation prepared. I wasn't going to share it, but I do have some slides that I think would be helpful to cover. If we could pull that presentation up. So just a little background context on this project. So there was a parcel map that was proposed in 2009. It was approved in 2011. And what that parcel map did is it subdivided the parcel into four lots. Three of them were 2.5 acres. The other was like 10.9, something along those lines. And each lot had a building envelope in it. Due to the time it was approved, it was never built out. It was during the recession. So the permit did lapse. And so our client, who is actually having a baby today, that is why he's not here with his wife, they bought it in 2022. So they came in and they actually started with just a standard grading permit. It went through the first plan check and they said, hey, you know, you come back, you actually have to do a variance. And so what I'm showing here is in blue is where this lot four building envelope was proposed back in 2011 and where our access road and single family residence is proposed in red. And so the goal here was to make sure the project was consistent with the previously certified MND, which evaluated visual impacts, biological, archaeological, et cetera. We did update biological to make sure it was current. But by proposing this single family residence, and Commissioner Lieberman can attest, it is probably the flattest portion of the site. It used to be a mine and gravel quarry back in the day. I don't know how long ago, but that is where a lot of these land formations came from. And I think to Commissioner Avila's point, my client does plan to build multiple ADUs on this property in flatter portions of the site down below. Or near the existing residence, which will be converted. We have a permit going in later this week. But ultimately, while it's not shown on the slope map entirely, there's a lot of 30% slopes that are spread out throughout this site. And to get an access road to these buildable envelopes would be very challenging to avoid. And so you're right, down below, maybe some opportunity for some small ADUs, JADUs, but for this primary principally permitted use, the best location is up here on this flat portion. And we did try and align this access road with an existing road. You can kind of see that. And so we really are just touching it in a couple of small instances for which the major grading permit, which is ready to be issued, will address through best management practices. That's all I have to say for now, but okay. I can answer any other questions.
Didn't know. Okay. Questions while we have the applicant up here.
Okay. All right. We got a few minutes till noon still. So why not just go from, can you preclude some of this grading on 30% slopes by going from Fox Canyon Road? Or does that not connect up to the ADUs and create more problems, or two accesses aren't allowed? I was just curious.
Yeah, and it's...
One of those plans did have the Fox Canyon access that I had thought made sense looking at it.
So this is getting access from Fox Canyon.
So this is the actual plan, is getting access from Fox Canyon? Because I thought it was access off of Badger.
So the site currently holds the Badger Canyon address because that's where the existing residence is accessed from. But on the left side of the screen is Fox Canyon. Badger Canyon's right to the south. Yeah.
So would be two accesses then, off of one off Fox and one off of Badger. Staff.
I'm asking staff to put. Okay, so this is the video. This is a good comparison here. A good aerial. So yeah, the current existing structures have access from Badger Canyon. This proposed is accessing from Fox Canyon on the side.
The new house.
Yeah.
Is proposed for a. Okay, I couldn't tell that from what I had.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem to have two kind of addresses or accesses. Well, I mean, multiple accesses aren't a bad thing for egress, but
this was reviewed by Cal Fire and Public Works, and they were okay with it.
in the different accesses for the ADU or ADUs plural in the main house aren't a problem?
Jerry Beard, Public Works. No, these are two local roads, so it's not like a collector or arterial. Well, there are restrictions on those roads, but because these are considered local roads, they're allowed to have a couple access points, especially on a project of this size, or property of this size, rather.
Thanks. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Does anyone have more discussion, or anyone ready to make a motion on this? Okay. Mr. Lieberman. I won't point at you, but...
Thank you.
Somebody, I heard a promise we were going to land this plane by noon, so.
I appreciate the opportunity to tour the site. I have to look at things like this and learning about the history of the site, that it was a mining quarry site. I mean, there's a lot of disturbance to the existing property already, and there's older roads that are, they're rutted from runoff, and it's true. Whoever did the grading did a great job of grading the top of that site where the proposed home is. And just kind of looking at where the existing roadway is and putting on the fire chief's hat and looking at the grade and the approach of angle and turning radius, there's no way to use what's left of the existing pathway. Need something with more gradual grade and a wider turning radius for those turnouts as well. So, if this was pristine, untouched land, I'd be a little more concerned, but it's definitely had a busy past as an industrial site. So the home and the proposed ADU is literally right off Badger Canyon. You pull in, and within 20 feet is the structure. So I hope that helps. I mean, it's a very large, flattened site at the top of this hilltop. It would make a lovely view. And why wouldn't you want to put a house there? As William Randolph Hearst once said. So just wanted to make those comments, and I'm ready to entertain a motion, but I just want to make sure all my peers have concluded discussion.
No, go for it. We can always have discussion after a motion, but great to have it.
Would you mind putting that up on? There it is. Thank you. I'd like to move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, Public Resources Code, Section 21,000, approve the variance for Project N, DRC 2025-0003, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B.
And is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. And is there any more discussion?
Yeah, I did just want to make a comment. So I am going to support this motion, and I appreciate the commissioners from the district going to the site and the comments on the disturbed site, because I don't think it's our job to approve a variance to just because a property owner wants, you know, the view site on their site. So I may otherwise be inclined not to approve this variance, because we do have limits on grading over certain slopes for a reason, and to preclude environmental detriment and more problems to come. Because this site is already disturbed, I think that's part of our findings here, or what should be into the record, that where there could have been alternatives or not, that this is the flattest site is in the record. But I mean, do we have in our findings for the variance the current site disturbance? I guess that would be a question, because I think that is an important piece. And I guess there was some listing in the staff report that it had been a quarry. So we kind of knew that, but I didn't quite consider that level of degradation until Commissioner Lieberman pointed it out. Is that one of our findings? If it's not, I would just kind of have it in our official findings as an important component of why we're granting this variance.
Cheryl Koo, County Planning. So we have three findings for the variance. One of them is that there are unique characteristics of the property. Mm-hmm. And when we detailed that finding, we discussed that there are steep slopes here. They attempted to place it in the flattest areas alongside the disturbed road, but the need to meet CAL FIRE Public Works Improvement standards would require slopes over 30%. So I would say we did recognize that there's some disturbance there. I don't think we explicitly said maybe what you're thinking.
Yeah, well, I don't know that we need to write that in, and it's part of the record here, but I hope we would recognize that's part of why we grant this exception, not because every property owner who wants to maximize on view deserves a variance, because that's what they want to do.
I don't think I agree with that being part of the record, to be honest. I mean, you could put it in there, but I don't think we're trying to set a precedent saying that the site has to be basically disturbed before we allow grading on 30% slope. So I would disagree with that.
Well, I don't think that's saying, you know, there aren't variances for every site, but that's a piece of this one. I mean, that's why I would be voting yes.
Yeah, I think if you vote yes, it's valid to state your reason for voting yes.
I had one more thing. Commissioner Wyatt shook a cobweb loose. As I was walking yesterday and talking to the property owner and the consultant, call me naive with land use, but why isn't this a ministerial action to grade a driveway? Why is it coming here?
I agree, because we've seen these many times, and generally we approve them. And it seems like it's going to add a much bigger additional cost for something generally that we're going to approve, unless there's like some really mitigating factors. So,
who wants to take that one? I mean, you want me to start with consequences from grading on slopes, and then somebody can clean that up and detail it? I mean, there are some potential high consequences from grading on steep slopes.
But we have staff that can kind of make the judgment call, and if they think if they need to kick it up to Planning Commission, they could.
Well, this sounds like an issue that we could bring forward in like a different a discussion of our regulations. Aren't we keeping track of the things? I'm just looking at you, Daniela, even though you're like, please don't be looking at me. But and Mark, but aren't we kind of keeping track of maybe regulations that we do want to bring back for more discussion? And maybe this is one of those.
We do have a list of items over the year with both the board and the Planning Commission that we look at, and potentially have ordinance amendments that go twice a year to the board.
Okay.
So something like that certainly could be looked at by staff.
Is this maybe something to add to the list?
It's a potential streamlining opportunity.
Agreed that, you know, there may be some cases we tend to approve these, but, you know, they do come for a reason or come with some potential issues. Maybe staff could bring that list to us, including this, at our year-end meeting, just to have some kind of summary of what that looks like, and that these lists could go somewhere. Would that be possible?
I'll meet with staff to look at that. We do have our board priorities coming up on December 16th, and so those are already in the works, but it's certainly something we can look at for future meetings.
Right, because these are issues, and agreed there's some question of this cost and process and what the requirements are. And if we just still don't really know them approving this, we're helpful or hurtful in that process.
All right. Well, it's a very robust discussion. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on this? Okay. Then let's have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry. Everyone's looking at me. So that is it. I am exhausted. Thank you, everyone. This has been a lot of work. So now I will entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And I will entertain a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting on December 11th. Is there a motion?
So moved.
So is there a second?
Second.
Make me hit you. all right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Thank you. See you in December.